This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
This time last year, the 1993 disappearance of Annie McCarrick, a young American woman living in Dublin, was upgraded to a murder inquiry. Now, the renewed investigation has thrown major aspects of what Gardaí thought they knew into serious doubt, says journalist Áine Ryan.
This undermines a narrative that became the accepted story of the disappearance of Annie McCarrick. This is absolutely fundamental to the re-examination of the case.
This is In the News from the Irish Times. I'm Saoirse Pollock. Today, revelations as Gardaí reassess the murder of Annie McCarrick. Áine Ryan is a journalist and a writer living in the west of Ireland. Áine, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Just to recap quickly, on March 26, 1993, 26-year-old Annie McCarrick, an American graduate, disappeared from her home in Dublin. Now, she'd first visited Ireland on a school trip and she returned to study at St. Patrick's College in Maynooth during the late 1980s. She then moved back again in January 1993 after she completed a master's at Stony Brook University in New York. It's now emerged that since this case was upgraded to a murder investigation last year, a number of errors were made in the original investigation. And you reported for the Irish Times at the weekend, Áine, about the latest developments in this investigation. So let's start with the photo of Annie McCarrick that was taken from CCTV footage at the AIB branch near her flat in Soundymount. It was originally thought to be the very last confirmed image of the American woman on the day she disappeared in March 1993. What has changed? What do we know now?
What we know now, and the Gardaí have confirmed this, is that footage was from 11 days earlier on the 15th of March 1993. How exactly that error occurred and became part of this quite flawed narrative over the last 31 years is a moot question. It may have been that Gardaí, in good faith, went to the bank looking for footage. I don't know how widespread CCTV footage was in other outlets at that time, but it was a good place to go to. And the bank, in good faith, gave them this footage of Annie, which is, albeit grainy, very clear. And then it became part of the flawed narrative. And I just think the mistake happened inadvertently, possibly, over the years.
Áine, we spoke about this case on this podcast last year, and at that time we heard that the last thing we know for absolute certain is that Annie McCarrick went to the AIB branch in Soundymount that day. That, as we now know, is wrong. What does this mean for the investigation that she may not actually have even been in Soundymount that day?
We know from widespread coverage from all sorts of sources that Annie was in Soundymount in her flat that morning.
Okay.
Her friends that she was living with left. She was in bed knitting, as far as I know, early in the morning. So she was there, number one.
Okay.
Number two, an important fact that is incontrovertible now is that she did go shopping, because her shopping was discovered inside the door, I think. This is what her friend Linda Ringhouse told me. And that shopping wasn't there the previous day, on the Thursday, the day before she went missing. And according to her friend, who I interviewed, is a very important fact, because there were perishables in that bag of shopping, and that Annie was diligent and would have made sure to put these perishables into the fridge. There was butter she was going to bake for the little restaurant she was working in, and it was just as if she dropped them and left in a hurry. The question is, why did she leave on her own in a hurry, or who did she leave with?
Áine, the new cold case team, who were appointed last year at the time of the 30th anniversary of Annie's disappearance, they've uncovered a series of other errors with the original investigation. What can you tell me about what else they've learned?
Well, This new team, which have been extremely diligent and basically gone right back to the beginning, making no assumptions, putting the narrative that everybody believed over the last 30 years that Annie, for example, got on a bus and went up into the Dublin mountains, ended up in Johnny Fox's pub, and that there was possibly some man there with her paying her fee into a gig. They have gone back and re-examined all of that. Now, the RTE documentary, Missing the Vanishing Triangle, they uncovered a lot of information which also challenged some of that narrative. So what has been said now is that Annie may not have got on that bus, 44 bus, to the Dublin Hills, and there were a number of students upstairs on that bus, and as far as I know, many of them have been questioned, and they never saw her going upstairs on the bus, even though an acquaintance thought she saw her getting on that bus and going upstairs. That's one change in the narrative. The second change in the narrative is that a group of French tourists were in Johnny Fox's pub on that night for a music gig, and some of them took videos, as far as I know. Now, and basically that they didn't see her. And Annie was a tall, long-haired, very attractive, beautiful, friendly, outgoing girl. So it's quite telling that both of those significant parts of the narrative, as well as now the bank story, have all changed.
What do we still know for sure about the day that she went missing? You mentioned the shopping, but are there any other elements that are certain about that day in 1993?
I don't think so. I think the shopping is the most telling aspect of this now. And again, family and friends at that time, and this is a slightly controversial fact around it, sent faxes to the investigating Gardaí, basically encouraging them to look closer to home in this investigation, to stay in Sandymount effectively, and just to follow her more personal life.
You spoke recently with Linda Ringhouse, who was Annie's childhood friend. Now, she criticised the original investigation's failure to pay attention to concerns expressed by Annie's family and friends following her disappearance. What were these concerns?
Yes, Linda, who had visited Annie, I think that a few weeks earlier in Ireland, was very close to Annie. So she may have known personal stuff that maybe Annie wasn't sharing with her parents, for example. And Linda was concerned about aspects of Annie's personal life that Annie had confided in her. She also, as well as the McCarrick family, were aware of some issues, and they faxed them to the Gardaí and would have felt that they should have been taken more seriously. It seems that there's some vagueness around these faxes and whether the Gardaí have ever confirmed that they were received. But I'm sure the new team have investigated that thoroughly.
Linda Ringhouse also told you that there were a few elements of the original Garda investigation that she never actually believed or even paid attention to. What were those?
Once again, Linda said in the piece I wrote that the most telling thing was the shopping bag just left down, abandoned. And Linda felt that there was somebody either waiting for her, who she possibly knew, or that she rushed out to meet somebody that she possibly knew. Now, Linda obviously doesn't want to prejudice anything the Gardaí are investigating at the moment, but she has said all along she never believed Annie got on a bus on a wet March day wearing cowboy boots, which wouldn't have been very comfortable for a big long hike through the Dublin Hills. So she never ever believed that thread that was central to the narrative for 30 years.
You also recently spoke to Nancy McCarrick, who is Annie McCarrick's mother, and you describe her as a sprightly 80-year-old who still cycles everywhere. What else can you tell us about Nancy and how she's coped over these past three decades since her daughter disappeared?
Nancy McCarrick is, as I said, stoic, philosophical, and I feel given strength through her religious faith. It's been a long 30 years. Her husband, whom she separated from in the aftermath of this huge trauma, Annie was an only daughter. Annie and Nancy, from what I know, were like sisters. Nancy was about to come over to celebrate Annie's birthday days after she went missing. They were just very close. And her house, from what I understand, is a memorial to her beautiful daughter. I imagine she copes through acceptance. I asked her, would she ever come back to Ireland? And she said to me, only to bring her remains home if they were discovered. But she also said in a little observation that I didn't include in the piece that naturally at this stage, she doesn't have wild hopes of her being discovered. Because remember, over the years, there's been various theories and there have been the highs and the hopes. And after a while, no matter what age you are, you acceptance is probably part of how you cope.
Nancy McCarrick told you that she was very impressed by the attention to detail applied by the new Garda team, which is now investigating her daughter's unexplained disappearance 31 years ago. What did Nancy mean by that?
She is extremely impressed by their absolute diligence. They've visited her twice and they have basically the kind of questions and focus is as if they know nothing. And they're starting. It's root and branch. And their respect for her opinions and those of other family members is very clear. And their kindness and consideration has been very important to her. So this is a very different experience because in an earlier piece I wrote last year, Nancy talked about the fact that 30 years ago, it was the men who were brought into the room to give the opinions. And after a while, she just let her husband do a lot of the talking.
So it's a very different Ireland that we're talking about when we look at when Annie disappeared in the early 90s.
Yes, it's a very different Ireland. And the, as I said, the forensic diligence of this team is, I think it's given her great comfort, no matter what the outcome.
Áine, it's worth mentioning that you have a personal connection to this case. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. My youngest brother, my late brother, Dermot Ryan, went out with Annie for some time when they were students in Maynooth. He died of pancreatic cancer, age 48, in 2017. But we often talked about the fact that since I was a journalist, I might be able to help bring the story of Annie out of the crime pages and into the human interest pages, make her more real. Last year, I talked to my family and we all had different memories of Annie because Dermot spent a summer with her in New York. He knew her parents. Actually, her late dad came and visited me when I lived on an offshore island for a time where I was married. We were all to dinner together and Dermot and Annie went away to Germany for a summer. So I suppose from a journalistic point of view, one has to ensure to remain objective in writing this story. But I really wanted to just try and bring the story forward and humanise it more. And I happened to have an album of pictures that included a lot of photographs from the time Dermot and Annie were together. They did split up, but they stayed. Dermot stayed in touch with Annie and Dermot went on to marry in Italy while Annie was still around. But Dermot stayed in touch with Nancy all over the years as well.
So you met Annie a couple of times through your brother. What is your strongest memory of her?
I clearly remember we were all out for a family meal in a restaurant in Kildare and Annie sitting amongst us all, inhaling the scent of a flower in a vase on the table. And she just exuded an ethereal presence. She loved Irish poetry and music, and there are signatures, her signatures on little children's books she gave to my nieces back at the time, with big curving writing as if she was from another magical world.
Finally, Áine, following the revelations of the past year from the cold case and the inaccuracies that have been highlighted, where does the case of the disappearance of Annie McCarrick go from here?
One can only have hope that, which makes sense really, that there's somebody out there who maybe knows some, may have some information that could help the Gardaí now, and that when there is a focus put on it through the media, through revelations, for example, that again challenge a narrative that was accepted for 30 years, it may just prompt somebody to come forward.
Áine, thanks so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
That's all for today. For more on the investigation into the murder of Annie McCarrick, subscribe at irishtimes.com/subscribe. I'm Saoirse Chapollock. Today's episode was produced by Declan Conlon. In the News, we'll be back tomorrow.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.